Hello, this is Daniel Gregory. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Perceptive Photographer Podcast. This is our 299th episode. Again, thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget, if you're switching podcast platforms, you can always find us up on any of the major podcast platforms. Hope you and your family, your friends, your loved ones are all safe and sound. It's still a pretty crazy time out there, so hopefully you're taking care of you and your family. I wanted to talk this week about something that I've been asked about a lot lately, and I think it in part comes from a recent change into Photoshop, but also from a lot of software that's changed. And that's, you know, what is the impact of AI or machine learning on photography? And so what does it mean actually now that we have these really kind of interesting software tools that let us so easily make what are not trivial changes to a photograph, but pretty significant changes to a photograph? And what do I think about the nature of photography as it relates to some of that machine learning? And so I thought I wanted to talk about that today. I thought that would be an interesting conversation that will probably continue for years to come. I think for a lot of people who are studying language, studying photography, particularly in kind of a more classic academic sense, there'll be years of conferences and journal articles and research into what this kind of means in terms of our thinking and approach to photography. But I also think it's important for those of us who are just photographers to think about and talk about, because I do think everybody has kind of a line in their head about what a photograph is and what makes a photograph. And so I think for us to have some language and understanding around what does that mean when it's no longer that, or when we think that's changed, how does that approach the way we might judge a photograph, view a photograph, think about a specific photographer? So I wanted to spend some time today, like I said, kind of talking about this, which is probably just the first of many conversations. Now, I am not a what you would call a naive purist in the sense of photography. I believe photographs have been manipulated from day one. And so from point of view, from image selection, lens selection, depth of field choices, color versus black and white, dodging and burning, color correction, there's always been some level of, let's call it darkroom manipulation within the photograph. But there's also been manipulation of the photograph on the front side of the camera. Like I said, the point of view makes a huge difference. You know, if you think about your field of view being 360 degrees and you choose to slice off a very small segment of it, you've in fact made a cropping decision. You've made a framing decision about what to include and exclude within the frame that tells a particular part of a story. Now, we do that oftentimes because we believe we're making a stronger photograph, a more interesting photograph, a better photograph, a photograph that shares the narrative we're attempting to tell. Whatever the reason, it doesn't really matter. We've made some decision at that point to include or exclude certain things within the frame. So there's always been some level, I think, of manipulation within the photograph, whether it be intentional or not, or sometimes heavy-handed. You know, maybe we're compositing. Maybe we're pulling together multiple photographs. Maybe you're a person who's really enjoyed darker manipulation. You were a black and white photographer, and you've always enjoyed heavy-handed dodging and burning. So there's been significant alterations to the medium and the way the photograph looks. Heck, shooting in black and white changes and alters the way we perceive and view the world. So there's all this stuff out there about how photographs and photography has always had some level of sort of editing, control, alteration of an image. So I don't think it's necessarily that we have that question in mind. I think for most of us, we would accept that there's some level of change there. Now, recently, we've started to see a lot of software come out with AI or machine learning, where there's a neuro-linguistic engine behind it, there's a network behind it, there's a bunch of machines behind it that are doing processing and looking at photographs and making decisions on how to quickly and easily change, manipulate, and edit a photograph. So photography has been able to replace skies forever, even in the analog darkroom. You could put one sky in a photograph instead of another sky. But now with the click of a button, we can put in a sky into any photograph. We can change a photograph's very boring sky into a prettier sky. Or maybe we want to change the lighting within a photograph, or we want to shift somebody's age a little bit, or maybe we want to alter how their smile looks. All these little things. Like I said, somebody who was really competent at Photoshop before probably could have done anyway, or somebody who was really competent in the analog darkroom could have done some level of that manipulation anyway. But now it's really easy, and it's being done strictly by a computer. So today, because I think I said we're going to end up with multiple kind of podcast on this, it's not a small topic. However, for today, one of the things that comes to mind is also the notion of computational photography. And We see this a lot with smartphones. Smartphones don't generate out the gate great photographs, but there's a lot of math, there's a lot of software, there's a lot of computation applied to them to make them look the way they do, to give them their certain aesthetic. So we're already creating some pretty aggressive software decisions to make a photograph. Now we layer on some additional complexities of software, some additional software that does complex things to our photographs very easily. And now we're getting photographs that may have been taken with a regular camera are now getting more and more access to this kind of squishy space between what existed and what can be pushed and pulled strictly at the pixel level. Many of those cases, we get better looking photographs. So I think there's a point where people are like, oh, that's great. My photograph looks better than it did and I'm happy. And for a lot of photographers, that's sufficient. And as long as the software makes them have a better photograph, they will continue to be happy with more and more software. But the line and that question, what it kind of bumped up for me is the more interesting question to think about. Because I think for each of us, we have, a line where we will create a photograph. And for some of us, if we replace a sky, that'll change into a photo illustration or a composite. And it's no longer just a straight photograph or what we would consider a normal photograph with a normal level of editing. We have language around that. We have concepts around that. And for some people, they would flat out tell you that, and other people will never tell you that. And we, because of our cynicism, we'll start to look for telltale signs of maybe that sky been replaced or not. But outside of that, this notion of computational photography and the research that got me interested in this topic more than what Photoshop and Luminar and Topaz and everybody else who's got some kind of machine learning going, programs at Stanford, MIT that are doing some amazing things with computational photography and AI, things at Google and how they're cataloging and seeing images and identifying images, all very interesting. However, we are now to the point where the computer can create the image without anybody being there. So you could feed to a computer the request, I would like a photograph of the Eiffel Tower on a slightly cloudy day at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in September with a few people on the street after having had light rain, and a computer could create that photograph. It could go look at the millions upon millions upon billions of photographs of the Eiffel Tower in Paris, look at different conditions, different light, and create a realistic looking photograph that never ever happened. It didn't exist in the world. It was never actually light that was captured. It was light that was generated by the computer. And for me, this is where the distinction starts to get interesting, because as somebody who's a photographer, one of the things that is kind of in my psychology and in the foundations of how I think about a photograph is it has certain elements that are required for it to be a photograph. I think one, it needs to be time-based. It has to either invoke the creation of time and the recording of time. Now, that time could be fractions of seconds. It could be real-time levels of capture, or it could be an extension of time, so a time lapse or a long exposure. But time is a critical element within the photograph. Another element that's important is that it's indexical, meaning it's of the world. So it's a photograph that is capturing something that exists within the world. And so for me, when we get into strictly true computational photography, and I'm now creating the photograph that I always imagined in my head from my chair, that is something different. That is no longer just a photograph. Now, it might just get the definition computational photograph, meaning that it was created purely in the structure of the computer. And we see this with pretty much any movie now. Most of the movies we see in Hollywood and TV shows have some level of CGI created, where the environment and the world they create, the things that the people interact with, don't actually exist. They're generated by the computer in a realistic way. And we accept that. We look at those movies, we believe those to be true, but yet we still talk about them being CGI. We still talk about them being special effects. We have language that describes how those things come to be. And even though there's been an evolution in cinema from tiny little models to computers, the notion of a special effect, something that happens outside the normal world, that language exists. And so for us to think about photographs, when a photograph is created solely in the computer, it's no longer of the world. It was no longer involved with the framing that existed within what was in front of the person. They could decide at any given point to include, exclude, create, shift, all of those things that we're starting to be able to do as photographers in the computer will do on its own. So one of the things that I think is interesting for us as photographers to start to have this conversation about, which is why I say I think we'll probably end up with, over the years, circling back to this concept more than once, is how do we as photographers start to define the language that specifies if computational photography is the exact same type of photography. It does the exact same thing. It works the exact same way. So therefore, we apply the same language, the same criticism, the same language back about how we read, process, and interpret that photograph. Or is it, in fact, something different within the genre of photography? So is it, you know, black and white, color, computational? Is it something that's different? So it has the same core underpinnings, but is in fact discussed, viewed, and criticized differently? Or is it in fact its own bucket and it becomes more illustrative? And so that the concepts and language we would use to describe it become something completely new. And the reason I think this is important for photographers is we get the opportunity to start to have that conversation now. Not as, look at what cool thing I can do in Photoshop, or look at how stupid Photoshop was for letting me replace skies and people are now going to be cynical about all of my photographs that I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning to make to get that beautiful sky. People are just going to think I Photoshopped it. Wherever you are in that continuum, what matters is that when other people who aren't photographers out there doing that work, creating those photographs, or you're the computational photographer who's sitting there doing nothing but computational photography, that we are the ones who are having the conversation to describe and define how that conversation should go. So rather than it being a knee-jerk reaction in the media or people who don't understand and think about photographs and photography in a meaningful way, getting to define that conversation. Because I think as we all, everybody who picks up a camera, you know, from a person who's just getting started to the most seasoned portrait photographer, and whether you're shooting in Rwanda, or you're shooting in Australia, Japan, China, wherever you live in the world, whatever your background, whatever your gender, whatever you are as a photographer, in that broad bucket that defines your photography, we need to be having these conversations so that we're the ones who decide what is and is not in our understanding of photography as the people who are making the work a photograph. Because I think it's too easy sometimes for other people to insert themselves into that conversation who don't actually do the work, don't actually think about it. Somebody who criticizes art and photography who comes in and gets to say, well, if photographs that now have XYZ and to this certain percentage allotment get to be this and not this, is not the person who should be having that conversation. I think the photographers should get to have that conversation. So as you start to think about your photographer friends and the conversation with your friends, rather than having the I like or don't like computational photography, I like or don't like the features that were added into Photoshop or Luminar or On One, whatever software you use to edit with, shift your perspective to talking about what does it actually mean and how do you draw that distinction? How do you decide what is the photograph? Is it still a photograph if the sky's been replaced? Or is that now a composite? Is it a photograph if the computer generated it completely without ever even capturing the light? If capturing light is foundational to your understanding and definition of a photograph, then if the light was never captured but was only fabricated, is that still truly a photograph? Is that still the same thing? Or does it not matter to you? Do you just like to look at things that you think are interesting? And if so, having that definition is important. And the reason this is important, and the reason I've gone a little longer than I normally do in my podcast, is when you look at somebody else's work and you talk about somebody else's work, knowing where your line is, knowing what your thoughts are on how you view the level of computation that's allowed for it to still be a photograph and not a, say, computational photograph or a photo illustration or whatever word we're going to use. Knowing that is important because when you have that conversation with the person who created it or the person who's sharing it or the person who's viewing it next to you on the wall, having a clarity in that's going to mean that we can move the conversation forward out of a like it or I don't like it, or I like the technology or don't like the technology, and really start to gain some insight into how we approach our own work. So it's that insight, I think, is what's important. So I'd encourage you, like I said, to start to have those conversations with friends and other photographers you work with. Not so much how do you do it, but what does it mean when it's done? And I will return back to this a few more times. Like I said, I still think it's an interesting conversation, but I didn't want to talk for 45 minutes about it because I like to keep the podcast at least reasonably tight. So hope you have a great week. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. Get out there and do something creative. Do something magical for somebody else. I think you'd be surprised how much a small gesture for somebody can make a difference in their day. And with everybody being a little bit tired and a little bit stressed, a small friendly gesture goes a long way. So thanks so much for joining me today. Hope you have a great week, and I'll see you next time.